Yeah, son. Come on through.
Ryan kept his finger on the trigger of the Sig Sauer, just in case Dean wasn't coming alone. His son eased up out of the hole, his hair and clothing covered with dog shit. He sat the lantern down on the floor, then raked pieces off his face with his fingers.
We found the other end. Comes out about 150 yards away.
The river?
Yeah, real close.
Where's Jack?
Watching the other end. Some cold hearts are out there, coming this way.
Toward the tunnel?
Didn't look like it. That tunnel isn't where anybody would want to go unless they had to. Looks like it hasn't been used by anything but dogs. Maybe they've even been kept in there for a while. Triple bad going through there, Dad.
We don't have a choice. Mildred, you and Christy get moving. Dean, help keep these youngsters moving along.
My son stays with me!
Let Dean take him. He'll stand a better chance with him than with you. Dean knows where to move and when to move.
Ryan flicked his gaze over to the other man, who held his daughter close to him.
Same for your girl, mister.
I know it. I've seen this boy in action myself.
Take him, Dean. Stay close to Mildred and Christy. We'll stagger the rest of them out.
Right. Let's go, kids.
Charity, older than the boy by a couple of years, took his hand and guided him as Dean helped them down into the tunnel. Mary tried to go after her son. Ryan swung the Sig Sauer around enough so that she caught his movement and intention.
You wait.
He's my son!
I know it. And you need to stay back a ways. You crowd up on him, Dean won't be able to get him back to you if something goes wrong.
He's right, Mary. Man knows what he's doing. Staggered line like this, we can cover for each other.
Connor!
Doc, you take the next group through.
I surely will, my dear Ryan. And how long before you join us?
A few minutes. JP and I are going to shut things down here.
Do not tarry. In her present state of mind, I know Christy will want you by her side.
Get it done, Doc.
Doc took another lantern from the shelves and lit the wick, adjusting it until it burned well. He dropped into the hole, then turned to help the women down.
Dear ladies, I do so apologize for not doffing my jacket as a true gentleman would, to make the going more palatable, but I fear it would be but a waste of my raiment.
The women didn't like what they had to do, but clambered into the tunnel all the same. The husband followed them, then Doc crawled through.
Connor!
What?
It appears to me that we're both in a bad place.
I already knew that! All right, Elmore, take the rest of them through. And if you aren't at the other end when I get there, you can bet all your jack that I'll come looking. And I'm good at hunting men.
I figured you would be.
Elmore took a lantern from the wall. Ryan tossed the man the weapon they'd taken from him. Elmore caught the gun and nodded grimly.
And I also don't intend to see anything happen to that woman.
I'll get you to Donovan if we get out of here.
Elmore dropped down into the tunnel after the others.
What's your plan, Naylor?
Ryan gestured to JB, pointing at the pockets where the armorer kept his grins.
We'll leave him a little going-away surprise.
I love surprises.
There's safety in numbers! Why don't you and yours come out, then we can get past those damn cold hearts?
Convince me!
Naylor seemed at a loss for words. Ryan caught the grin JB tossed him. He walked to the door and pulled the grin's pin. Working the grin, practiced in what he was doing, he jammed it between the bottom of the door and the floor, wedging it into place with a knife he got from one of the dead men. The grin balanced precariously, the plunger pressed tight against the door. Once it was opened, it would send the grenades spinning away, the 3-second delay fuse inside burning. JB slipped his grin onto one of the support struts at the back of the room, tying it into place with a rag he picked up from the floor.
When your blast goes off, it should free this one. Second blast will catch anybody coming through that door after the first one, or give them more cause to think about coming through so quick.
Either way, it'll buy us some time we need.
Ryan returned to the window, puzzled when he didn't hear the slap of bullets against the building. As he watched, he saw misshapen brutes weaving between the stacks of wrecked wags.
The ghoulies. Guess they got tired of waiting for dinner.
Bastards moved through that wreckage smooth and quiet. Good thing we didn't get caught out there.
The ghoulies shattered Naylor's defensive line, driving his men out from cover. They fired into the muties, but it was almost like shooting at shadows. The ghoulies were too quick for the sec men, and they swung their axes and makeshift weapons with deadly accuracy. Without warning, the sec men broke from cover and rushed toward the building where Ryan and JB were. There was nowhere else for them to go. The ghoulies stayed hot on their heels.
Shit. Time to go.
Ryan and JB ran for the tunnel and dropped through the hole in the floor. The stench of the dog shit and wet fur filled their noses. Ryan reached up and closed the trap door, shutting the armorer and himself into the darkness. Working to keep the Stire clear of the muck below, he put a shoulder against one of the walls and started forward.
Well, the grins worked.
They kept going forward as fast as they could. Even if Naylor's set crew didn't find the tunnel in the building, there was a chance the ghoulies already knew about it. Ryan saw the rectangle of light ahead. Within minutes, harsh sunlight lanced into Ryan's eye as he emerged from the other end of the tunnel. He came up in a blind created behind stacks of wags. His companions and their charges awaited him. Doc, the humid wind whipping at his grayish locks, offered Ryan a hand standing up.
Anything?
We appear to be well out of sight here, my dear Ryan. But I fear that such harbor is fleeting at most. We would best be served by setting about our course again, whatever that is.
The river, double quick. I saw some boat docks during an earlier wreck. Maybe we'll take one for ourselves, see how far we can get. GP, I want you and Jack walking point. Keep each other in sight, with a 40-yard lead on the rest of us.
JB and Jack took off at once, already knowing from the sun's position which way the river lay.
Elmore, you go next. Dean, I want you on him. If he makes a move to break free of the group or moves to hurt you, put a bullet in the back of his head.
Elmore moved out, staying the agreed-upon distance back from JB and Jack. Dean fell in behind him, the Browning looking big in his hand.
The rest of you fall in if you're going with us. Keep up, or we'll leave you behind. We're only going to live as long as we can move quick.
The group hesitated only a moment, then got underway. Even with the children, the group moved quickly. Jack and JB moved quicker, racing through the junkyard until they reached the high wooden wall securing the back. Most of the wall was constructed of old planks, with replacement sheets of rusted tin and boards where men or animals had broken through. Jack and JB chose one of the tin-covered areas and hacked their way through with a camp axe. And no matter what happened between the Coldhearts and Naylor's sect team, Ryan figured it only meant bad news for the companions. Jack threw aside the last piece of tin and led the way through. Ryan hunkered down under cover, gazing back along the two aisles he could see between the wag wreckage. Perspiration clung to him, making the feces stuck to his clothes and skin feel even worse.
The dogs.
What about the dogs?
They've picked up our scents.
How do you know?
I can feel them. It's Florin, lover. Her being in my head is affecting my powers, making them stronger.
Mildred and Christy squeezed through the hole in the fence, and Ryan followed. With the dogs getting their strong scent, he knew there'd be little chance of throwing them off track. The land broke away from the ville, falling into a rapid decline as the group neared the river. Small wooden docks made of cast-off lumber jutted into the water. Some were higher than others, indicating the water level was subject to change. Judging from the docks Ryan saw, the river was sometimes as much as 30 feet higher than what it was now, and pushed back over some of the tumble-down wreckage left of Idaho Falls. Tall grass and cattails, still yellow and trying to make a comeback from the earlier flood stages of the river, lined the sharp incline leading to the water. A handful of boats were tied up at the docks. The morning fishing was done, but men remained at the docks, mending equipment and nets. Women and children stood around 55-gallon drums filled with burning wood, smoking the fish that had been caught. None of the boats were equipped with engines. Masts stood proudly in all of them, the sails furled. Only two were big enough for the companions and the hangers-on they'd picked up. Knowing they had no choice, Ryan signaled the others to ground behind the ville debris lining the riverbank, then waved Jack and JB to him. They went toward the longboat Ryan chose, walking in a loose triangle. The afternoon sun beat down on the riverbank. The sand deposits scouring the sides of the incline were already nearly dry, as if the rainstorm that had come earlier had never happened at all. The women and children spotted Ryan and the others first. They were poorly outfitted, dressed in patched homespun that had faded from hard wear and too many washings. Their faces carried scars, physical and emotional. Boning and scaling knives filled their hands, but they backed away. Mothers sent small children scampering to hide in the debris or in the nearby weeds. Ryan didn't say anything because there was nothing to say. Even if the people didn't know what he was there for, they knew he was there to take something that wasn't his. The sailboat had a tall mast that advertised plenty of room for sailcloth. With the wind blowing strongly and in the right direction, Ryan hoped it would be enough to push them quickly against the sluggish current of the Greenish River. Ryan brought up the Stire, shoving the business end toward a bearded man, mending a net on the rickety dock beside the sailboat. The man was squat and powerfully built, probably not up to Ryan's shoulder, but almost half again as broad. He wore a faded gray sweatshirt with the sleeves hacked off, perspiration stains beading across his upper chest, and striped overalls that had been cut off at mid-thigh. His hair was dark brown, but glinted red where the sun had washed the color out, the same as his beard. He wore a baseball cap that bore a picture of a leaping green fish.
Move away from the boat.
This is my boat, mister.
The man motioned to two teenage boys helping him with the net.
Not now it isn't. Now it might be the only chance at escape my friends and I have got.
My boat's the only way I got of making a living for my family. Take that from me, you might as well shoot me right here.
It'll be done. I plan on dying last if I got a choice. And you stopping me now is the same as pulling a blaster on me.
The sailor stood slowly, a long gutting knife in his hand that looked like a short sword. Scars on his face and arms showed that he was no stranger to fighting or blade work. Ryan knew what the wag engines meant. They were running out of time. His finger tightened on the Steyr's trigger. He knew he'd kill the man if he had to. The boys flanked their father, taking up defensive positions. Ryan had yet to see a gun on any of them, but he didn't doubt he'd have to kill the boys if he killed their father. It didn't sit well with him. The sailor squinted past Ryan, gazing in the distance. His thumb nestled confidently on the broad-bladed gutting knife. It was turned edge up in his hand, the saw teeth glinting in the afternoon sunlight.
You got trouble with slaggers?
They mean to put us on the last train headed west.
Chill any of them?
Many as we could.
I got no love for the slaggers, but I love this boat, and I need this boat. I lose it, I lose myself. There ain't no fucking around about that. You know how to handle it?
I've sailed before.
But you don't know this river. She's a tricky bitch, especially now. Stuff piled up on the bottom where you least expect it. And during the dry season like this, if you don't know where those places are, you'll rip the bottom right out of her. And not get away anyhow. Let me captain her for you, and you'll improve your chances of getting away. And I'll improve my chances of keeping my boat in one piece.
Makes sense.
Ryan looked at Jack and got a nod of approval from him. The teenager trained his .357 Magnum on the man. Move.
My boys go with us. I ain't leaving them here to take their chances with the slaggers when they watch me sail out of here with you.
You're getting mighty pushy for a man one bullet away from being chilled.
I figure there's no better time. Still remains to be seen if you can chill me before I get close enough to open you up and take a look inside.
All right. They go too.